A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome, welcome, dear listener, to another episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Matt Knight.
Hello, Mr. Joe.
Hello, Mr. Matt. Hello, dear listener. Welcome back. Welcome. Episode number 7, season 5, year 11, something like that.
Year 11.
Year 11. Wow. Year 11.
I'm glad I don't have to go back to year 11.
Me too.
No more high school for me.
Well, Matt, I tell you what, on a topical there, because I'm turning 40 this year, it means everyone I went to school with is also turning 40, which means out of the woodwork come a load of people that I haven't spoken to since I was 12 years old, 16 years old. Remember that, you know, I left my hometown as soon as I could. And
hometown of Watford, baby.
Oh, Watford. It's one of the worst places on the planet. It really is. I have no interest in any of my youthful escapades. Life for me started when I moved to Brighton. So
begins at Brighton.
Exactly.
And ends at 40.
Yeah. Also, check this out, dear listener. I've got a vintage mug if you're watching on YouTube. If not, it's a very vintage Guitar Nerds mug with the original logo that that Mark Packham designed all those years. Or I think he got someone, to design.
I got someone to design it.
Was it you?
It was.
Oh, wow.
And then you destroyed it. Hmm. Crapped on my dreams, Joe.
I did change the logo.
It's fine.
That's rather good.
But yeah, here we are. We're also on a new platform, which is totally irrelevant to the people who, hardcore listeners of the world.
Absolutely makes no difference to you, dear listener, but because Matt lives in the east of England and I live in the south of England, we obviously don't podcast in the same room. We use a platform that records all our stuff locally and then gives me the files to put together afterwards. And I've moved to a new provider on the recommendation of a few people, Blake White. Wyland, Philip Carter, Johnny Dibble from the In the Pocket, the bass podcast. They're all using Riverside, so I've moved across just to see how it goes. So let me know if this podcast is substantially worse than.
Let me know if my beard looks better or worse.
Yeah, exactly. Or if the audio quality is.
Of course, the all important audio quality. Yeah, sure.
Exactly. But yes, dear listener, this episode is called "Downsizing Your Guitar Rig." It's kind of partly inspired by some of the discussion that was happening on the Facebook group, the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook, after last week when I was talking about, you know, I've started my big sell off, and actually I haven't got any further on it. I listed like three things, and I haven't had the time.
You still own three things.
I was a little under the weather last week, and I just, you know, instead of listing things, I played a lot of Red Dead Redemption 2, which I regret. But I fully intend to get back on it and actually list everything. But yeah, because I'd been talking about that, people have started talking about the concept of downsizing, and, you know, what instruments they'd keep, what is an essential to a rig, what you actually need. People are looking at reducing their collections all over the shop.
It's tough, isn't it? I think it's, as we'll get into in a bit, it's not only tough to get things that you actually need, but it's just sometimes getting rid of things that you're not using, but you just want to have them around. You never know. It's the unknown. It's getting rid of the unknown I always find difficult. Hmm.
Yeah, I guess so. But I think as we're going to talk about a little bit later when we come onto it in more detail, I think there are things you buy because they're fun And I think there are things that you buy because they're essentials. And you know, when push comes to shove, some things people would keep, some things people would happily move on. But we'll get onto that a little bit later. How have you been, Matt? How's the gear world? You're finally getting all your stuff out in your new house. Your big pedal board's come out and about.
It has. Finally getting there. Finally settled in the studio. For people watching, you can just see a blue room. This is not the final room.
So
the room,
blue.
The room will. I was trying to do, you know, the fancy, you know, YouTuber Twitch streamer thing. I'll have a nice blue light. Maybe I'll change it to a different color. But it's slowly getting there. The gear is slowly. You talk about selling stuff off. I'm sort of in the same process, really, of going, what do I want to put on display? Because there's things that are like, I'm probably never going to plug into, but I want to have on display. But then there's also things like, they're going to be on a pedal board. And then there's things I'm just like, I might as well sell this and buy something else or put the money into something else. Pedals, kind of easier. Guitars, very difficult because I think for me, maybe differently to you, Joe, I've got many guitars that probably don't hold much value.
You tend to buy a guitar when you really want one. Every guitar you own is like a thing, a thing. Every guitar you own, you've bought for a reason because it performs a specific role that you want it to, or it's something that you've lusted after for a long time.
Indeed.
You tend to be very selective with guitars, whereas I'm like, oh, look at this deal on Reverb. And
It's did we talk last week about my old vintage telly? Did we talk about that last week?
No, we were talking about that in our chat with the OG guitar nerds, Mark and
that was
Mark
right.
and Jay. We were
that
talking about your old 72 Telecaster.
Yeah, I had a 72 telly standard. So basically, just a normal telly in blonde. Right.
Was that rosewood or maple?
It was
Matt.
Rosewood, I think.
Right, okay.
So
it's kind of like a 60s style telly.
Yeah, I think I bought it because I was, I think we've talked about this story many times, but sold the Esquire that I really loved to buy the 72 telly because I wanted to own a vintage instrument.
Right.
And then I sold it and traded it for, I think, a custom shop because I actually generally didn't like the guitar at all.
No.
But I didn't want to change anything because I was like, it was all original, like one
it's
owner.
It's the problem. If you buy a vintage guitar, if it's not great off the bat, you can't change anything.
Yeah. And I think I sold it for, I don't know, somewhere between 1500 and $2,000. I can't remember the specific amount.
Ooh. Oh, right. Of course. So this was what, 2016?
This 2017? Was 20. Before that, I mean, I was still at GAC at that point. So this probably would have been 2014, 2013.
Right. Which is definitely before people started to consider 70s.
Absolutely.
Guitars is like a proper vintage. Hey, I mean, I think what changed it was when Fender started doing 70s custom shops. Because when they started doing 70s custom shops, it was so weird because they were like, here's our 70s, precision bass. It's £3,800. And it was like, I can get a 70s precision bass for £1,500.
Yeah.
And then, of course, past that point, the price of real 70s stuff shot up to match the custom shops.
Yes. So effectively, sold it, traded it, and thought, oh, you know, whatever. And as you say, the market has very much changed.
Yeah.
And there is what I would consider a fairly beaten up example of a well-worn, well-relicked 72 standard telly up for $7,000. $7,000! I just, that, you know,
it's got to have, surely, that comes with some sort of legacy. Is that someone famous
really
played it?
I don't think it does. No. I think it's literally just that, you know, I guess it's got to the point where an original telly is going to set you back, like a 60s telly is going to set you back, or 50s telly is just going to be crazy money.
Yeah.
So obviously it's inevitably moved on to the next thing and the next thing. And yeah, we're on the 70s and lo and behold, they're worth crazy money. Yeah. And I guess the thing is, the argument is, if I'd have kept it because I loved it, would I be so bothered about the fact that it costs, I could sell it for $7,000 now? Because if I'd have owned it for 10 years, played it for 10 years, would I be going, oh, I love this guitar so much, dare I sell it for $7,000? Or do I only really feel that way because I was like, oh, if I'd have just like kept it, I could have had a guitar that I don't really use that's worth $7,000. Do you know what I mean? It hurts more, I think, because I don't own it and I didn't like it than, you know, sort of having a guitar for all that time and loving it and then being like, oh, now I don't have it anymore, if you know what I mean. So
would you buy vintage again?
Would I buy vintage again?
Yeah.
I would not. I don't think I would ever specifically be in the market to buy one.
Right.
Because I don't think there's anything out there I could afford of things that were, you know, everyone would love to own like a 60 Strat or whatever. But then again, I think you could hunt around for ages, maybe not find something, could cost loads of money. And I just think investing that much money, you've just got to love it so much. You've got to love it so much. And I just don't, I think I'd much rather find a new guitar that I really liked that I kind of could invest in and spend some time with and then maybe go, oh, you know, I've sort of had enough of that. I'll move on to something else where, I don't know, trying to buy a 59P bass and it's just going to be like, it's going to be so much money that you're just like, would I even start looking? So, you know, affordable vintage to us is, I just think it puts certain guitars that you're probably not even going to look at realistically.
It depends on your taste, doesn't it? I mean, like, I love looking around at old Harmonies, Framus guitars, Hofner. Like, some Hofners still go for, like, really decent money, even the really old ones, you know. It's just you can't go for the, you know, the big two.
Yeah, or Gretsch. So that was that. Long way around, so I think we went on a bit of a tangent there. But yeah, finally getting the studio out.
Yes.
And this weekend I also went to Synth East. Norwich's first ever modular synth festival. and I tell you what, the modular synth world is absolutely beyond bonkers.
Right.
They're doing stuff that you're just like, how has the guitar world not grabbed hold of some of this stuff and just made it a thing? And I think the thing is, it's like, you know, Eurorack or, you know, modular synthesis is effectively you're building a synthesizer out of various modules, various individual things that you plug together in different ways.
Right.
So it's sort of the same as building a pedal board, you know. But with a modular synth, you're starting with a sound source and you're running it through a filter and then you're maybe running it through a delay and you're running it through, you know, a chorus and then you're going out into a set of speakers. So the same is sort of what you're doing with a guitar. But when you get into the effect section or things like that, there's just stuff out there. You're like, if this was a guitar pedal, people would just be going insane. You know, there was a module there, I can't remember the name of the brand, and they've basically, they're building Game Boy cartridges, like modern day Game Boy cartridges that like plug into a module and give you like different effects. And I think the thing that came closest was it Cooper Effects had the like cards that you could plug in. I think it was called the Arcades. You could plug different cards in. But that sort of modular approach has always been really difficult from a guitar perspective.
I don't know. People have done it. Look at Jackson Audio's Fuzz.
Yeah. I just think this is never as quick to swap in and
I see what you're saying.
In and out, if you know what I mean.
You still go and bolt the back and you're actually handing a proper chip.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like they've put it in a nice, you know, SNES cartridge.
Yeah, but it's just the thing is, I think there's a quirkiness to a lot of modules.
Right.
There's an inventiveness to a lot of modules that I start to see is maybe happening a bit in the guitar world. You know, if you look at obviously Chase Bliss, if you look at Game Changer, although the Game Changer modding thing we talked about, but it's sort of mainly still based on the pitch and dynamics of your guitar playing rather than being truly modular. We talked a little bit, I think, before about the Moog pedals being modular.
Yeah.
So I think people have kind of like tried it, but they're still rooted in the same sort of effects. I guess Ranger Effects is maybe another one of those brands.
What did they?
But it
just that they're crazy.
Yeah, just as they're crazy.
They do those the Igor, which is the little the little light sensitive expression pad.
But it sort of just got me thinking. There's so much more that you can do with modular in like a sound world.
Uh-huh.
And actually, it is totally possible to interface guitar with modular gear.
Well,
they're two very different levels. Mm-hmm. There was a company, they discontinued it, unfortunately, called Pittsburgh Modular, that made a pedal board that also allowed you to plug a guitar in and run it through modules.
Right.
Because the levels are very different. But I think from a guitar sound design perspective, going guitar into modules, you can come up with some wildly unique different sounds. I mean, Strymon make a big module that is basically their tape echo module. And then you think you can, like, from outside sources, you can control the pitch or the rate or the speed or different things like that.
Yeah.
I guess the only thing that kind of maybe fits in that world in one box is Meris.
Oh.
You know, and things like the LVX.
The Mercury X. I spoke to Meris this week, actually. They reached out after hearing one of our demos on YouTube, on the
amazing
podcast. And they're going to send us a Mercury X. So that'll be here soon. Yeah.
So, you know, I think there's definitely guitar companies being a lot more inventive, but I think there's a lot of companies that are still rooted in the same thing. You know, there's still a big market for fuzz, and fuzz has seven components.
Sure.
But
there's been a move towards stereo rigs, definitely, over the last little while. Like the normalization of, I appreciate stereo rigs have been around a long, long time, but the normalization of it, I think, you know, people like Rabea just using it as standard kind of brought that into the limelight a bit more. And then you get products like, you know, the IR2, the LVX, the Mercury X, the KMA Machines Endgame, which is whole thing is that it's a stereo cab sim at the end of your chain. It does. People are sort of going, well, you can do this. It's not that hard. Certainly with the move towards digital amplification and running things straight into front of house, so you're not having to bring, you know, a massive amp, a pair of amplifiers along, and making people go, oh, so stereo absolutely sounds better, and it gives me loads more options. Why don't we do that?
Yes, although I have run into an issue with that, Joe.
Right.
Whereas I've got my sort of monster pedal board out, and I've plugged it in, but in my small box room, I only really have space for one amp. It's just, you know, it's a tragedy.
When are you going to be moving into your big office?
In the summer, hopefully,
right.
Because Zilla are sending me another matching 1x12. So I'm going to have three 1x12s. And I've got three amp heads. So, you know, it'll be a three amp rig
That's
for
incredible.
Long.
My Zilla cabs are on the chop, actually, for my big sell-off. Got two basket weave fronted pink 1x12s. They're part of the mini stack. So one of them's angled and one of them's straight.
Very good little setup that. Yeah. But I know that you don't really use guitar cabs as much.
No, I don't use them at all. Guitar Nerds is sponsored by Stringjoy Guitar Strings, the world's first true guitar string custom shop. The thing that I love most about Stringjoy is just their attention to detail, their dedication to making their strings the best in the world. And that's a labour-intensive task that they don't shy away from. Stringjoy are also innovative. They're always looking for new ways to make strings better. As guitar players, we've become so used to all the shortfalls of commercially available strings that we stopped even looking for them to be better, last longer, intonate well, easily.
Stringjoy bring all of that to every pack of strings they make, and they're available almost as readily as any other generically made guitar string. Stringjoy strings are available at stringjoy.com and at 400 plus dealers across the globe. If your local store doesn't stock Stringjoy yet, ask them to.
But I've come into a problem where before I moved, I had two amps set up, run everything, dialed everything in stereo. Hadn't really thought about it. I was like, oh, you know, it's set up in stereo, so the sounds on like the Microcosm are, you know, big and expansive, and the CXM78, yeah, I'll run it in mono, it'll be no problem. And every time I've plugged it in, I'm like, why does it sound so bad? I swapped the cables around and went to the other output, and I was like, oh, it's like I've really not set this board, like the output box that I've got really doesn't sum to stereo to mono. Right. And a friend of mine came round at the weekend, and he was showing me his pedal board, and at the end of it, he runs the Walrus Audio Canvas stereo line isolator. So right, it allows you to run your pedal board in stereo and then out in stereo, or you hit a little button and it perfectly sums stereo to mono.
Oh, what a gorgeously helpful device.
And it's got stereo XLRs on it,
oh,
which is quite cool. So you can have it as DI or I think it's DI or line in, maybe.
Very nice.
So I thought that's quite a cool little box. I thought I'll invest in that, or I'll just build a smaller pedal board.
How much is one of those little canvas summing boxes?
£200, I think.
A chunk of money for something that doesn't do anything audibly. I appreciate it's a really useful tool, and it's definitely worth getting. I'm just like, damn.
I think it's probably really useful for someone. So his rig was, for this tour that he was doing, was Tonex. Uh-huh. Guitar into Tonex, and then in the effects loop, no, guitar into Eventide H90 into Tonex into the other half of the H90.
Right.
So he had things either side, and then out into this, and then it gave him DI outs, XLR out straight to front of desk. So it's quite handy for that if you're running maybe an amp sim or something on your pedal board that doesn't have XLR outs.
Definitely.
And you might want to go stereo, you might want to go mono, because they make a mono version as well, which I think is £130.
Right.
And I think it's just quite good for being able to run line out from something like an IR2, which doesn't have XLR outs, for example.
Yeah.
Or you want to go line level into a mixing desk, maybe, or yeah, you're going to use it in a gigging situation. I guess it's not relying on the venue having some sort of DI box that you might be able to plug into and still being able to run a stereo rig.
Yeah.
I mean, one on the Walrus website, I think one of the examples they're showing is a guitar into a TU3 into this and then XLR out into a PA. Because I don't think there's any amp modeling in here. No, if you're running a low impedance amp simulator by simply flipping the DI/LI switch, Superb Sidekick for amp in a box gear such as the Walrus Audio ACS1. It's a great addition to any pedal board.
I've got a Walrus Audio ACS1.
I need to get it out and actually learn what it does.
It makes amp sounds.
Yeah.
It makes amp sounds. Yeah. So yeah, I need to start building and putting a pedal board together for mono. Okay. Well, I'm in the current room, but at the same time, I'm like, maybe I'll just build a modular pedal board.
Well, maybe
fall down that rabbit
maybe
hole.
Maybe when we come on to the main subject of this podcast, downsizing, maybe we can talk about what would go on a mono rig for you.
Let's do
a mono
it.
Pedal board. Before we move on to the main subject, I do want to do our sound sample of the week, which kind of tied into a bit of news, which was then made absolutely redundant. At the end of last week, on Friday, Great Eastern Effects Co., great friends of mine, they released a limited edition pedal, the Small Speaker Overdrive, one of my favourite little drive pedals. The Small Speaker Overdrive, they just sold 500 units, so they made 10 very unique units with a different faceplate, a stainless steel faceplate instead of an aluminium one with a different graphic on the front. And they made just 10. They were the same price as the standard one, which is about £200, and put them up on their site. And they let me know, and I was like, brilliant, I'll record, you know, the sound sample with the small speaker overdrive that I have, just to show what it sounds like on a podcast, and I can talk about, you know, it encouraged people to get this really cool, very rare thing, because it only went up on Friday, sold out on Saturday. Got rid of, yeah. I mean, I know it's only 10, so it's, but
gotta
but
be it was quick. Like,
yeah, people were straight in there with it, so but I'm still going to do the sound sample of the small speaker overdrive. And dear listeners, if you didn't pick one up, you missed out. Let's have a listen to that. So for this sound sample, because I'm showing off, so the small speaker overdrive by Great Eastern Effects Co. It's supposed to emulate that sort of Fender Champ sound. So it's that really boxy, driven small amp recording tone. It's that sort of thing. So like really mid-push, but a lovely amount of transparency to it. And I just think there's so much detail and texture to this pedal. Mm. So rather than like working it in a track with maybe bass and drums, I've just recorded three guitars, one left, one right, and one doing a lead thing, and I've put a little bit of reverb on them all. And that's it. So it's mostly just trying to show off this pedal. All of the guitar work was done on my Fender American Original 52 Telecaster on the bridge pickup, which is a Green Pickups 51 style, super low output, very thin, lovely sounding single coil. This is the track. Let's see what you think. Go the
smooth,
sloppy ending there, but but there it was. Tell me, Matt, obviously the listeners got that in stereo, because I always overlay the track. Did that come to you some to mono?
It came to me quietly in, I think, one ear.
None of the platforms can actually do it. I mean, it sounded great to me. It played the whole thing stereo, which I didn't get on the previous platform. It always summed to mono, and I was always like, oh, God, I can't hear
it. I could tell it was a very Joe Branton demo, and I like that.
Thanks.
Good. I like your style. I like your vibe. Yeah,
there you go.
But a cool pedal we've obviously checked out before, and some cool stuff coming from Great Eastern. A brand sort of pinged out of nowhere and sort of found favour with many great players. So long may it continue.
Yes, they are a fantastic brand. Really excited. They've got some new stuff on the way actually very soon. So I'm excited about that. In fact, did I leave it on my shelf? Oh, I'll put my head there. That's fine. It's fine.
Oh no, we're gonna have to start again.
No, it's totally fine. It's just a prototype.
Good.
So anyway, so that was the small speaker overdrive. Dear listener, you should absolutely check out the small speaker overdrive by Great Eastern Effects Co. Even though you can't get the limited edition model now, unless they're up on Reverb for twice the price already. Maybe they will be. Who knows?
Could be, you know, we live in that kind of world.
Yeah,
exactly. Don't we, Joe? Where things just, those limited edition things just go for crazy money.
Reverb prices.
Okay. But yeah, there we go. Cool.
Well, let's...
Nice little demo.
Yeah, yeah, thanks. It is, yeah, great pedal. Let's talk about downsizing our guitar rigs then, Matt. So what happened was I asked people on the Facebook group, in the sort of name of downsizing, what things people would downsize to, as in if you had to limit your guitar collection to maybe one, what would you keep? And I want it to be a personal thing. I'll read what I wrote on the post on the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook, dear listener. I said, with all this talk of downsizing, what one guitar would you keep from your collection? It doesn't have to be the most versatile or the most expensive, just the one that you love the most. That was the deal. So I got people to suggest their options. Now, I filled in the first few options, which were the standards. So just, you know, because we're just going to have a million options if I let people put specifics. So I just meant like Telecaster, Strat, Les Paul, SG, ES-335, Jazzmaster, Jaguar, Mustang. But I let people add options as well. And we got some really interesting additions as well that, of course, mostly only got one or two votes because they tended to be a bit specific. But yeah, they were good to add. Now, Matt, as someone who's not on social media, how do you think this played out before you know any of the results?
So I'm clear. They could only pick a specific model.
They can only pick
one.
They can only pick one. So their options are Telecaster, Stratocaster, Les Paul SG, ES-335, Jazzmaster, Jaguar, Mustang. But of course, people could also add their own additionals, and it's possible, Matt, for example, that someone would add, I don't know, base six, and that everyone would vote for base six, and so that would win.
Knowing
so it could
our audience,
be anything.
Knowing our audience, yeah, that could well be a possibility.
Guitar Nerds is sponsored by iZotope and Native Instruments, two companies who provide the bulk of the recording and editing tools used by Guitar Nerds. If you have a home studio or if you're thinking about getting into demo recording from home, then iZotope and Native Instruments provide the tools that you need to make premium quality recordings with ease and with virtually no equipment other than your guitar and laptop. iZotope make all the voice editing and audio repair tools that I use for the podcast each week, and Native Instruments Guitar Rig 7 is one of the best, most comprehensive collections of virtual effects and guitar amplifiers available anywhere. Use discount code NERDS10 on any product in the iZotope and Native Instruments catalog for 10% off their fantastic range of tools.
I think that's such a difficult question. If you were downsizing your rig, you could only have one of them, because some of them are quite specific.
Yeah, but it's just personal taste. Because I said, don't just pick the most versatile guitar. Don't pick something because don't be like, oh, I don't know, a Charvel DK24 because you can do everything and coil split. You know, it's not about that. It's about personal taste. So this isn't about trends or versatility. This is about what our audience feel. Our guitar nerds, what they feel. What do you think?
I kind of feel that it's going to end up in something offset,
right?
Maybe that's crazy.
Well, it's not really that crazy, Matt. If you think about the guitar that we designed with Vintage, which, oh, dear listener, if you're not on the Guitar Nerds Facebook group, I did mention it on there the other week, but I have now seen the Vintage guitar that we all co-designed last year, and I'm picking it up at the Birmingham Guitar Show at the end of the week, and it looks well good. But don't forget, Matt, of course, they
can't believe that was last year.
It
doesn't feel like that long ago.
We started building it 6 months ago. I made the deal with them in March of last year to do that build.
I think maybe some sort of offset
might have
creeped in there. I reckon Gibson might have been fairly low,
right,
based on our audience, perhaps. But I don't know, Joe. Put me out of my misery.
Okay. Well, I tell you what. When I was keeping an eye on this to start with, Telecaster was what got my vote, and it stormed ahead at the start. Jazzmaster was hot on its heels, and I thought maybe the Jazzmaster would have it. But actually, as it's finished up, the Jazzmaster is the fourth most popular shape and the only offset to be in there. Shockingly, Les Paul. Les Paul's came in third. That's right. Much higher than, you know, as you point out, like there's a relative amount of Gibson bashing that goes on the Guitar Nerds group. And, and you know, so there's that. I thought the winner would be the Stratocaster, if you consider reverb sales over the last few years. The best-selling guitars have been Strats and PRS Silver Skies for the last few years running. So thought it would be that. And it came in a tight second, but the Telecaster did pip it with 26% of the vote as we're podcasting, 21% of the vote going to the Stratocaster, 18 to the Les Paul, 10 to the Jazzmaster. And then I guess ES-335 is the next one with 7%, I think. Yeah, looks right. That way. But there you go. So the Telecaster is the guitar that people would keep hold of the most, which
I can see that. It's funny, isn't it? The guitar that was basically invented first is still the most popular. I mean, I know people will be like, oh, no, you know, other guitars came before it. And it's like, yes, I'm aware of that. But I don't know, Tele, it's almost that case of it sort of had everything. I mean, I would probably... Would I have a Tele over a Strat if I could only have one?
You've only got one Telecaster and you've got, what, 3-4 Strats?
I know, but I think I'd rather have the Tele.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, I'd rather just have my my Music Man. Although saying, which, you know, saying that, like, the guitar behind me is a Strat. So
What Strat have you got behind you at the moment?
I was going to say Johnny Marr, but that doesn't make any sense. Does it?
Oh, it's your
Ed O'Brien.
I forget you own that one.
Ed O'Brien. Yeah, I mean, I forgot I owned a lot of guitars when I moved house, and then was like, oh yeah, they've been in cases for ages.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tele, it's a good shout. I mean, it just does everything right, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It really does. Yeah,
there. I mean, I said to not pick Versatile because that's not what it's about, but it is a good all-rounder. But also, I just think maybe it's the sort of guitar that, you know, people get attached to over other instruments. Mm. We did have some great other suggestions, though. You know, things like the Charvel DK24 did come up as a suggestion.
Yeah, I mean, I owned one of those. Great guitar.
Yeah, like Ben Caffrey very simply suggested Super Strat, you know, like Buckers, Floyd Rose, etc., which was a good way to keep that general, because otherwise there are so many different versions of that. People are going to vote for all sorts of different things.
Yeah.
Basics only really received one vote. Nice to see the Yamaha Revstar making an appearance there as well.
Good guitar.
PRS didn't really. A couple of options there. The PRS Custom 22 received a couple of votes. And the Strandberg Bowden also did appear with a couple of votes.
So if you had to keep one guitar out of everything you've got then, Joe, the big sell-off, what would you...
What would I keep? What one thing would
what
I
keep?
Would you keep? I think if I had to get rid of absolutely everything, I would keep this, what I'm holding in my hands, dear listener, if you're watching on YouTube. It's a Grez Mendocino, one of their Redwood Grez Mendocinos with Lola gold foils, just because it has a super chunky... The neck is so chunky, it makes my Telecaster feel flimsy, my sort of 52 Tele feel flimsy. And it's just really good. It's not a do everything guitar, but then I think I didn't get the Telecaster because I do love Teles and I love Butterscotch Teles, don't get me wrong. I got the Telecaster because an awful lot of my job is making little demo tracks, and a Telecaster works with everything. You know, there's nothing that I plug it into that it doesn't sound great.
Yeah.
The Grez, there are going to be stuff that, like, I can't, you know, if I get sent an HM2 style pedal, Grez probably isn't the answer for that. But I appreciate a Telecaster isn't either, but I bet I can make a Tele work in that scenario. I just find them to be just great. Great sounding without much effort. The Grez needs a particular set of things with it, but that's totally fine. I just love the guitar. It was about personal connection to the instruments, and I just think it's an amazing instrument.
I think that is a big thing with Teles. Like you say, they don't need a lot of... They don't need a lot of mucking around with.
No, it's, you know, the Telly's set up with 10s, you know, and most normally I set everything up with 12s. The Grez is set up with 12s, but because I use the Telly not really for making my own music, the Telly is set up with 10s. And when I come to demo, you know, a pedal, I have a Studio One session set up that gives me a Neural DSP Tone King amplifier. So it's like a little preset that I've made where, which is sort of lightly driven, like just lightly driven with a bit of reverb on it. And that's it. And I can just pick up the Telecaster, have that plug in and plug the pedal into it. And generally speaking, without much twiddling, it's good to go, you know?
Yeah. 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 I think, I mean, I do love my Baha Telly. Yeah. I really do. I mean, ultimately, if I had to keep one guitar, I would keep the Music Man. I still think, and we've said it a million times before, they make the best guitars.
Yeah,
ever.
They do. Well,
you could rip all that out, though.
Are you going to rip it all out?
Actually, some of it doesn't work at the moment. I don't actually know how to fix it. So maybe I will rip it out. I mean, that's the thing. You could just remove the whole circuit board and put it in, yeah. I guess. I don't know, actually, because there's no wires anywhere. Need to inquire. I'll have to inquire with our friend Rabia and be like, can you help us out? Can I have a Rabia signature for nothing, please?
That'd well, be you great. Had his, you've got his last signature model, haven't you?
I have. Well, I've got, yeah, it's his Chapman. But, I'd keep the Music Man. But I think everyone who listens to this podcast for any sort of time knows that that would probably be the case.
Yeah. So let's talk about you downsizing a pedal board then. If you're not going to have the motherboard, you're not going to have this huge thing that runs stereo into a couple of amps, just something that's simple to knock around. What pedals do you view as being? Would you have a switcher still for a small board? Because, of course, I have a small pedal board and I still use a switcher.
This is the interesting thing, isn't it? Because a switcher, you know, doesn't have to be some sort of mega 8-loop, 2-dual stereo thing. It can just be, I want to turn 2 or 3 pedals on at the same time.
Sure, you could just get one of those little strips to go down the front. I almost bought one actually off of Amazon recently. There was like some, it was 99 quid. I think it was a Hotone one. But, you know, just a little simple strip that you can run right at the front of a little pedal board and plug everything else into. Kind of like that idea.
Yeah, I think.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
I think in all honesty, I'm thinking maybe I think one of the things is, for the longest time until I set this up the other week, I was basically had nothing. Right. And I was kind of just enjoying plugging the guitar in and using like Wazeres, you know, to play with and just kind of going with a drive sound. But, you know, there's an element of like, oh, well, I love what the microcosm does. How can I get that in a smaller box, for example? Can I port the whole pedal board to a mini thing? But I'm so used to using MIDI and accessing presets. And I'm like, am I really going to... I think, one, fork out the money. I've had some great switches. Disaster Area Designs make some great switches that are MIDI capable, that have small loops in them. I think we talked about them before, Joe, for a small pedal board. You know, you could argue MS3, for example, with three loops. But I think I actually want to move away from all that and basically have a pedal train junior and then just a few things on and drop a few things in and out. You know, one delay, one fuzz, one modulation, a boost, and go from there, I think, and just step away from the kind of all of the funny modular stuff, all the funny noise boxes, because ultimately it sort of makes you play. I built the board to do certain things and it makes me play in a certain way. And maybe I'd want to put a pedal board together that ultimately sort of forces you to do something different. And I got some great, we got some great pedals that, like fuzz pedals and stuff, that I wouldn't necessarily put on the board. They're very specific. They kind of need to see a guitar signal at the front. So I'm going, how can I bring everything down into
pedals? Do you think you go for maybe like classic things? Are you going to go like high quality classic style effects, or are you going to want some all singing, all dancing, more modern things in there?
Does the Dan Electro French Toast count as a classic?
What was the French Toast?
The French Toast is the octave fuzz. Maybe I'll just do a food series, and I'll just have.
Yeah, have you got one of the little boards? Have you got one of the food boards?
I have got one of the food boards, so I could do one of those. The Summer of Love pedal board.
Oh yeah, you've got it still boxed, haven't you?
I have still got one boxed. Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's the dream.
But you know, funny, before we started this podcast, our friend Paul over at the Studio Rats just put out a video going, is this the best compact rig? And it is.
I love that man.
He is an amazing man. And he's an amazing guitar player as well. Such a great player.
Yeah.
He's going guitar into IR2.
Right.
Out into a DI box. And then in the effects loop, he's running an HX1. And I'm like, yeah. Like, that's, you know, I think that's, you know, and because I think the HX1 is stereo, although actually, no, maybe that wouldn't work. I haven't watched the whole video yet. I've just seen it. I was like, oh, that's a really good idea. And I actually kind of like the idea of doing a, could you run an IR2 in the effects loop of an H9 or, you know, an HX stomp, and then effectively you've got effects pre and post. You know, you have, like I said to my friend, like my friend's pedal board, it's a Tone X, that's your amps, and then you've just got effects, an effect either side. Because I'm sort of going, well, I can't have two. This is the thing. Do I build a pedal board for one amp and a bit of fun there, or do I build a stereo pedal board with an IR2 and run out into monitors? Because that's, you know, then you can keep the whole stereo thing then.
Sure.
But yeah, I think so. I'm sort of leaning towards the sort of, tiny pedal board. And then I think maybe, don't know, I need to sort of dig through the box of stuff that I've got. But I definitely know we've got things like, you know, the fake trees from Audio Kitchens, like not used that enough. But then I've got a great...
I mean, that is an insanely
good pedal. I know. And then I've got a really good sort of digital but analog style delay from Screddy Audio, which is like amazing.
I think you've got our Reeves Electro Black Hat Fuzz.
I do.
Which is one of the best fuzz pedals you could possibly buy.
It's one of those ones that's so good, I don't actually want to step on it just in case. You know, and then I've got things like, okay, well, I've got a Deluxe Memory Man, but then I'm like, unless that's in a switcher, sort of like my other Electro, my old Big Muff, it's sort of like, it will just break if you step on it. So then I'm going, okay, well, maybe I wouldn't use that, but then is it downsizing because it's massive? So I don't know, maybe I need to build a set of rules. Yeah. You know, and then just kind of go, okay, what can I build within those rules?
You've got our Poly Bebo as well. You could have something that does some fun stuff on there.
I have. But then I'm thinking, if I do that, I'm just going to go back to what I was doing before.
Right.
And I'm sort of going, okay, well, maybe I want something a little bit different, perhaps.
I see. Okay.
What about, well, you've always run a compact rig, haven't you, Joe? So
yeah, my rig's actually right next to me right now because I was rewiring it all. I need to cut one more cable. I've got one of those Boss, cut your patch cable to size kits somewhere. So I need to go and find that after we finish podcasting so I can finish my board for band practice tomorrow. But at the moment, as always, I'm always running the MS3 as the switcher just because the effects in there are so good. Like I have actually retired my Boss OC2.
Oh, Jeff, what are you doing?
I'm using the internal octaver on the MS3 because it's pretty good. It's actually really not bad. Once you know how analog octavers work, you know how you've got to be careful around those notes. And I use it so occasionally, it's a really essential part of my sound, but I use it so occasionally that it's a lot of space to take up. So I run that. And actually, I've retired my VB2W as well. So I'm running the vibrato from the internal sounds on the MS3 as well. And those are two pretty big tones for me. Pretty essentials,
yeah.
To be running off of the MS3, so I just really like the pedal. I just really trust it for that sort of thing, and also the ring mod is dealt with by the MS3, which is good. But I am other than the TU3, I've got the Wazacraft TU3, the black box. Other than that, I've got the Thorpe FX Fat General. Great compressor, does that squashy vintage thing really, really well. And is the first pedal actually in ages to replace my Boss BCB1X, the X series bass compressor. They do a guitar version of it as well, dear listener, and it is well good. Because it's kind of multi-band, but because the controls on the X series kind of listen to each other, you can make it do that squashy vintage thing, but you can also get a really transparent, really usable compression as well. And then I've gone back to the MXR Phase 90, the best modulation device in the world. Every now and again, I took it off the board for ages, and I was trying all these different things, putting all these other pedals on, being like, yes, something's going to replace it. I got the camouflange from Thorpe FX, and I was like, yeah, something's got to replace the Phase 90. I want something more exclusive, something cooler. And actually, it just comes down to the Phase 90. It's just perfect. There's just nothing I don't like about it, so it's silly for me to remove it from the board. So that's gone back on. I occasionally use like a little bit of a, you know, that sort of Roger Waters Pink Floyd delay that he does on his bass, where he's almost like rhythmically playing. It's like, he's playing over the delay tails. It's like a root line, but he's just thickening it all up. It's almost like a gallop that he does with the delay tones. I've moved to the KMA Machine Cirrus. I've got this shadow version of the Cirrus, which is this just a grayscaled version of that pedal, just great colorway. And I've got that because it has they have a modulation setting on the, it's a delay reverb, but I shut the reverb down. I don't really like the reverb, but the delay on it is fantastic. I mean, the reverb's very good, it's just not for me. It's like, you know, octave reverb or a low pass or high pass filter. It's not for me. But the delay has a modulation setting, but then you can set the sensitivity of that, so as I dig in, I can get my delay tails to modulate more, and I really like having that control, you know, because a lot of pedals that do modulation on delay tails, it's either here's some modulation on your delay tails or here's not some modulation on your delay tails, so it's a nice way to get that. And then Sans Amp VT at the end of the chain, which is basically my amplifier, because then I just run an amp super clean, and so the Sans Amp VT does all the work. And then drives are being dealt with at the moment by the Ashdown Triple Shot, but I'm pretty sure that's going to get switched out for the Earthquaker Devices Blooms, which is going to be very annoying because it's going to leave a space because the Ashdown pedal is like a two.
Sometimes I've avoided changing things because it would just leave a space, and I'm like, I'm not going to reset my whole pedal board just to for the sake of one space.
Exactly. And I think I'm out of power as well on my block on the underside, so I really don't want an extra space because it would be difficult to fill without changing the power supply. And then fuzz at the moment is being dealt with by the Red Beard Effects Honey Badger.
because it's such a good fuzz for bass. Because it's an octave down fuzz, it means I can go really heavy on the fuzz and still keep my fundamentals. And normally, if you want to do that as a bass player, dear listener, you need a fuzz pedal with a clean blend in there.
Yes.
Otherwise, you just get all thin. But having the octaves down mean I don't need the clean blend at all, because it's got so much subby presence. It's like putting on a DOD meat box and a fuzz at the same time. That's what that pedal feels like. I love it very, very much. But that said, I think that pedal is going to come off, because I only have one space for a fuzz, and I really want the Frederick Effects, their Dresden synth fuzz. Have you seen that, Matt? It's a wedge chassis.
I don't know if I have.
It's got a clean blend. It's a super synth fuzz.
Oh, I think we talked about
fuzz.
It before. Yeah, I think we talked about it before, didn't we?
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. And I watched some videos recently of bass players using them, and I was like, yes, this is cool. So I think that's probably I'm going to purchase one when we go to the Birmingham Guitar Show next week, but we'll see. So it's not a lot, you know, that's pretty minimal, you know, one delay, one fuzz, one drive, one compressor, one modulation pedal.
One tuner.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, one this. Yeah, and then before you know it, you've got 20 pedals on your pedal board.
Oh, it's you know, it's not too much stuff. Not too much stuff. One, two, three, four, five, six pedals if you exclude the tuner. That's I think that's pretty reasonable, and all that's done on the Boss BCB 1000X pedal board.
Great pedal board.
Yeah, wish it was fractionally wider. That's what I wish.
Okay, I'll feed that back. I'll make a special one, Joe.
Yeah, thanks, mate. Thanks.
I actually think it's a really good case, because it comes, you can put everything underneath, and it comes with the little wheelie lids and everything like that, which
being able to wheel
really
that
like.
Around is very, very useful, especially for me, just because I don't drive and I live half an hour away from the train station, and I live in a village with no taxi service, so you know, I've always got to walk it to, you know, and a pedal board, even an 8 pedal, you know, sort of pedal board, a half hour walk, that'll do your arms in. So it's lovely.
Yeah, no, I think I'm just gonna go for the pedal train junior for now.
Well, there you go.
Do that. Maybe see if I can go 4 pedals and see where we end up.
I mean, Matt, JD and I spoke about this, Philip and I spoke about this on a podcast recently. I'm very into the Fender pedal boards at the moment. You need to check those out.
Which ones they are.
They're so affordable. They're so affordable. They're cheaper than everyone else. They look great. Okay, so they're a brushed aluminium, and I think people are a bit love-hate with that, but I think they look cool. Plus you can get the Fender power supplies, which are very good and also undercutting everyone else price wise despite the, you know, a great power, and they're proper cables on the Fender power supplies, proper IEC cables. So
actually the nice thing about the Fender pedal board is it's got those clips underneath for your cables, and a nice little holder for your power supply, which is quite nice.
Exactly,
nice,
and they have little things cut into the aluminium, machined into the aluminium, where the for you to loop all your cabling and stuff. Really handy. It's the dream neat pedal board.
I have not seen those.
Matt, welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast.
Professional pedal boards. It's just a shame that the way they've cut the holes and everything, you're still going to cover everything in Velcro. So it's one of those things, isn't it? But they look like they come with a really nice case. The cable holders are a nice touch. And
it's
three sizes.
£115 for the small board, something like that.
It's not bad.
And then if you wanted like their their smallest power supply, I think it's like a £99.
Right.
And you could probably daisy chain a couple of pedals on there and get up to your 6 or 7.
Annoyingly, I've just got too many pedal boards. I have definitely got a Pedal Train Junior knocking around somewhere. I'll have to go into the garage and find it, but I've definitely got one.
Oh, really?
Knocking around somewhere,
I'm sure of it. The other week, me and my partner Emma, we've been clearing out all our clothes. Our wardrobes are packed. So we're clearing out all our clothes, put them in bags, take them to the charity shop. And then we're like, oh, we've actually got a really busy week. So I decide to dump them up in the loft. Take those bags up to the loft. What do I find? A Pedal Train Pro, a Pedal Train Novo 32.
And
The feeling.
And at a pedal train Nano, I think it was a Nano, or maybe a Metro 24, like up in my attic. And I was like, wait, I bought a pedal train Metro 24 like 2 months ago. So,
they're
all going to be part of the purge.
Yeah, it's just one of those things, isn't it? Yeah. Got to keep on top of what you buy. Need to write a gear list, otherwise you just end up in situations like this.
Yeah, exactly.
That is painful, Joe. That is definitely painful. But I know exactly how you feel because I have been there. I've been there many, many times, so I know exactly what it's like.
Exactly. Well, we are coming towards the end of this week's podcast, in fact. So we've got some more stuff to talk about that we're going to go over onto the Patreon to talk about. We want to talk about, of course, Gibson have opened up the Gibson Garage in London. We're going to be talking about that. And I guess that sort of leads into the whole Gibson Jimmy Page thing. It looks like Gibson are going to be doing some really interesting signature stuff if the people who they use to launch the Gibson Garage London are anything to go by. So that'd be interesting. We didn't mention sort of amplifiers for downsizing, so maybe we'll talk about that a bit over on the Patreon episode as well. We'll see how that goes. But before we go, I do want to thank all of our top tier Patreon supporters. So dear listener, if you're listening to this for the first time, you can join us over on patreon.com/guitar nerds. You can sign up to be a member. You get an extra podcast every week. You get our entire back catalogue of over 500 episodes and mini series of the Guitar Nerds podcast. There are three tiers: $1, $5, and $10. And I would like to thank very much every single one of our $10 tier Patreon supporters. So thank you very much to Nicholas Strom, to Rocket Rob Patterson, Phil Sadler, Marcus Deluxe, Suresh, Dorsonic Pickups, Rob Witherden, Anton Fryant, Barry Gresbick, Steve Davis, John Conaway, Yogi the Guitarist, Ty Allen, Kyle Harris, Sean Hughes, Andy Hoffler, Eric Hemmer, Jeffrey Wax, Dan Pilver, Brian Einsler, Dylan Griffiths, Mark Hizau Kadawaki, Eric File, Peter Peche, Chris Franklin, Andy Manley, Joe Puttick, Blake Weiland, Phil Radomski, Dave Lee, Ross Edwards, Jason Wharton, James Dorr, Jake Gray, Derek Rich, Scott Kennedy, Steve Merkel, Abe Matthews, Christopher Losith, Stephen Burke, Robin Smith, Kytopia the Band, JD Short, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Rob Nordvik, Scott O'Brien, and of course, Moog Gravit. Thank you. Thank you, one and all, folks.
Whoop, whoop.
Whoop. But yes, we are. So that concludes this episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. Just before we go, dear listener, we're going to talk about this more. Well, next week's going to be the rundown of the guitar show. We'll talk about this more over the next coming weeks. But Barry Gresbick from Gres Guitars did get hold of me to let me know about the Gres Basics that has now been built. And he was like, what about if we do a deal for your listeners? You know, I'll do like a discount and then that can go out to your listeners. And if anyone wants to buy it, they can buy it. And I was like, yes, or you could give that discount to me. Everyone, I've bought it. I have bought the Gres Base 6. That's coming to me, not to you. It's going in to be painted next week in that gorgeous gloss black. If you remember, dear listener, if you listened, we designed a Base 6 like 6 months ago, maybe longer.
I think it's like a year ago.
Maybe a year ago. We did it with like a Charlie Christian in the neck, a mute kit. Oh, it's going to be amazing. So I'm very excited about that.
Can't wait
yes,
for Joe to send it to my house.
I will let you borrow it, but nice. All part of the downsizing.
Oh yes.
Anyway, thank you very much, dear listener, for listening. We'll be back next week with more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Goodbye.
Hey, Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.